The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thanks for joining us once again. I am Paul Orlowski with Father David Hojnacki, who's joining us. Father, newly minted priest, I suppose, first year of priesthood. Welcome to AM 1260 The Rock and God Calling.
Thanks for having me.
Where'd you grow up?
Grew up in Hudson, Ohio.
And early inklings of calling to the priesthood?
Yeah. So I remember when I was in the second grade, Father Damien Ferentz was assigned as a newly ordained priest at my parish. And he was just super energetic and super joyful, as he still is to this day. And I remember seeing him doing his job, and it seemed like he was having so much fun doing his job. Mm-hmm. And I looked at many of the other adults in my life, and they seemed kind of miserable doing their jobs. And so I think that joy early on planted a bit of a seed in my heart of thinking, like, maybe this could be something fun to do.
Yeah. How old were you at that time?
I was preparing for First Communion, so second grade, I think I was 7 or 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And it was early on, kind of a young, somewhat immature understanding of what the priesthood really was. But I saw it and it was attractive to me from an early age.
Mm-hmm. What was your home life? Weekly mass, daily mass?
Weekly mass with the family. When I was real young, there was a little bit of a, like, are we going to mass this week sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then, oh, man, I must have been like 5 years old when my mom kind of told us, it's not if we're going to mass, it's when are we going to mass? And that we kind of made that change over of like, it's, we're not compromising on this, we're going every week. And so there was weekly mass and nightly family meals. I grew up with three siblings, so I have an older brother, a younger sister, and a younger brother. And all of us kind of have taken very different paths, and we're now about as diverse as a family comes, as many families are. I grew up with them in Hudson and going to St. Mary's Church, really loving that parish community. We would always take forever to leave church on Sundays because, you know, my parents would want to be talking with people and we would be kind of tugging at their arms like, come on, let's go. And they'd always be like, no, this is your parish family. Like, this matters. It matters that you're a part of this community. And soon we came to see the value in that as well.
Mm-hmm. There's somebody told me something one time. They said, you know, that years ago, Sundays belonged to God. Now they belong to the NFL. And it's sad. It's funny, but it's sad, you know.
Yeah.
The church family is definitely important. Your mom laying down the law, how important?
It was very important. She kind of took up a bit of a leadership position with leading our family into the faith. My dad kind of took a different path, and he has now since taken up the mantle in a more intentional way of being a leader in our faith in the family.
Now, I read that you were also considering possibly marine biology
or
maybe an engineer.
Yeah, from an early age, just like the physical world really was fascinating to me. And I think talking with other people, it seems like a lot of kids take an interest in marine biology. Like, the ocean is just so mysterious and fascinating. So I think around, like, I don't know, second and third grade, that was really what I was fascinated by.
Sure.
And then got a little bit older and realized that I had a bit of an inclination and proclivity for mathematics and for kind of problem solving. I was always taking apart my pens and putting them back together in class to keep myself entertained.
Engaged.
I loved understanding how things worked. And so that's kind of where engineering came in. And in high school, I figured out I was good at and enjoyed physics, which was, to me, that was a good enough indication of like, that would be something I could do.
Yeah, I like physics, but I couldn't. Chemistry, no way. The periodic table mystified me.
Yeah, it was interesting having that. Like by the time I got to high school, there was very much a choice. Like it turned a little bit binary in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, I knew that I could do either thing, right? I could go to seminary, become a priest. I could go to, you know, a state school, study engineering. You know, marry my girlfriend, and like that. Those were kind of two lives in my mind. And I think having the option, especially in hindsight, having that option was so good and so freeing. Knowing that I didn't have to do this was so important.
It's an odd turn, though, from the standpoint of being a numbers guy, and now you're into philosophy and psychology and sociology and obviously religion.
Yeah. You know, it's a more common turn than you would think.
Really?
Talk to some priests and some seminarians, and you'll find a decent number of ex-engineers and people who at some point were kind of fascinated by the physical world. I think it makes sense for us as Catholics that, like, you know, we're so corporeal, right? Like we're physical beings in the way that we worship. We're sacramental people. And beyond that, like, the church has long been a great supporter of the sciences and of studies in a broader sense. And so I think there's something there that I haven't quite locked in on of like why it is that there's this link between engineering and the priesthood. But,
well, you know, at some point I wondered, do you get to a point where you're understanding the physical world and in your mind, this couldn't have happened by accident?
Yeah.
That sort of thought, maybe?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. I mean, you know, the scientist who's a Christian studies the world because God created it, and to know the heart and the mind of the Creator in a particular way. I was listening to, oh man, I'm forgetting the name of this kind of philosopher out of Cambridge, and he was talking about how the atheist scientist has a real problem to contend with. The atheist scientist, he does science with his brain, which in their conception is a randomly developed piece of cells that just fire randomly and there's no design to it at all. Mm-hmm. He says, if you go into your lab and there's a piece of equipment that just came about randomly with no design to it at all, would you trust it?
Well, yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
No, like, right.
We have a very good reason to trust our minds because our minds were created by the same Creator who created the physical world, who created the universe, and who created truth.
Yeah. And of course, you talk about the scientists of past centuries, many more monasteries.
Oh, absolutely.
And we still talk about some of their findings to this day, yeah. Obviously. You know, I'm, much like you, it's kind of funny the way life takes you. When I was like in high school or something, you had to give a paper and then read it to the class, I wouldn't go. I'd find a way to get out of it in some fashion. And then I end up a broadcaster for 50 years, you know.
Wow.
So it's just funny the way God calls us, I suppose, but
yeah.
I never would have thought I would be doing this for a living, or, you know, the TV that I did for all those years. But
I would bet the Lord was still laying the groundwork for that early on, that he was laying the foundation for what he was going to call you to.
Yeah, well, that's what our show's all about.
That's
God
it.
Calling, right? Father, stay with us. We're going to be back after these commercial messages right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father David Hojnacki is joining us on God Calling today. I am Paul Orlowski, your host, each and every week at this very same time. Thanks for joining us. Father, you talked about influences, your mom, Father Ferentz, but you were out of the place that I kind of jokingly refer to as the priest factory.
That's it.
And we know what that is, and kind of fed on itself for many, many years, and I guess probably still does, out in Hudson.
Yeah, we've been really blessed with the culture of vocations in Hudson.
Absolutely.
It was definitely a big influence on me. When I was in high school, I started getting to know some of the seminarians at my home parish. I mean, many of these guys are now incredible priests. This was Father Patrick Schultz and Father Ryan Mann and Father Jeff Barnish, Father Anthony Simone, Father Dan Samidi, Father Rich Samidi. These guys who I saw them living out or responding to God's call in their lives. You know, they were in seminary, they were joyful, they were just good men. And I saw that on And it was so attractive. I wanted to be like them. I wanted to follow in their footsteps. And in addition to that, like having someone who was already at the seminary where I wasn't forging new ground. Mm-hmm. I wasn't starting something new, but no, I was following in a grand tradition from a parish where the culture says our young men respond to God's call when he calls.
The youth group's very important there.
Absolutely. I am constantly inspired by the youth of Hudson. There's a group of young people there, and I'm not sure if you've heard about this. They have prayed night prayer together every single night since the COVID quarantine ended.
Wow.
They get together, and in the early days, they were gathering in the grotto at the church, and because that was outdoors, that was kind of the only place they could meet.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd get together and spend time together in community, and then they'd pray night prayer and spend more time in community. Sometimes they're playing Frisbee out in the parking lot. But pretty much every single night, I'm sure with very few exceptions, they're there and they're praying together as a community. It's not anything that the youth minister started. This is a student-led thing that is going. And of course, that feeds on the official programming at the church. That feeds on kind of the life teen ministry that's going on there. But yeah, these teens, they're so holy, and they just inspire me.
Preteens, seeing those teens, hey, it's cool. It's cool to be over at church. It's cool to play Frisbee and to do night prayer, things like that. Whereas in a different culture, somebody might be, oh, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that our young people are hungry for community. And if the church can be the home in which that community exists, then, man, that's just going to be so good for the teens. It's going to be so good for the wider parish community. And so I really hope that our parishes can see that and learn from that and become a place where our young people feel at home, where they feel like they don't just have like a place, but where the church is their place.
Mm-hmm. Too many times, I think the community is online,
yeah.
And it's not real. It's not. I don't know what word I'm looking for, but this is way healthier, I guess.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think that like the virtual community can only really be beneficial when it supports the physical and real community.
Mm-hmm.
Like this night prayer group, they have a giant group chat that they have where they kind of plan it out and say like, hey, what time are we meeting tonight and all that? Where are we meeting? Is it raining? Oh, can we get into the church tonight? And that group chat, they're sending memes to each other. They're being goofy and ridiculous. And
teenagers.
Yeah, they're being teenagers. It's great. But like it is there for the purpose of facilitating the real community. Like they're getting together and they're praying mm-hmm. together and they're praying for each other. They'll like get together like, hey, this person needs our prayers after night prayer. Let's gather around. We're going to pray over them. We're going to ask the Lord to send his blessing down on them.
Wow. That's really neat. That'd mm-hmm. be fun to witness.
It's pretty cool.
As an outsider. Yeah. You mentioned when you got into high school, by then the little pre-5-year-old or 6-year-old, whatever it was, You had kind of had some strong ideas by then that you probably did want to pursue this. Did it just kind of grew, or did all of a sudden you kind of think,
Yeah. For many years, it kind of lay fallow in the back of my mind of like, I knew this was, this is something that I might do someday. But I don't know, as a 12-year-old, there's not really much I can do about that.
So true.
It just kind of lays fallow. It lays in the back of my mind. And that was until I was going into the 8th grade. And I went to a camp that in Hudson we put on for the middle schoolers. So I was a camper, then I was a counselor when I was in high school. In college, I ended up being a staff member, and then now I'm on the board of directors for it. It's called Camp Celebrate. It's kind of a tacky name, but it's a really wonderful camp. It's a place where young people encounter Christ. And there are so many places where young people encounter Christ, and oftentimes they're at summer camps, which is a phenomenon that I want to understand better of exactly how and why that happens.
I've heard that from people on the show several times. Yeah.
There's something going on there that, I don't know, smarter minds than mine should look into.
Mm-hmm.
But long story short, I met Christ there. It was the simple message when I was praying with the seminarian that essentially God sees you and knows you and has a plan for your life. And that just like blew my heart open. It changed everything. It was the first time I was ever surprised by God. And there's something so beautiful about that first time that you're surprised by God. Because I'm surprised by God constantly, right? But I also know who he is, and I know that he's surprising. That first time, it's almost doubly exciting and mm-hmm. mind-blowing, because it's like, well, who is this? And what is this incredible, miraculous thing that's happening in my heart right now?
I can hear it in your voice. You have a joy in your voice. There's no doubt. When you were finally ordained, is it almost like, now I can get down to business after all these years of study and practice and et cetera?
Yeah. Ordination is, man, it's still something I'm unpacking. Because, like, I don't know, going through an ontological change is a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not as if, like, my hands started buzzing or anything. Like, no, like, physically, I feel the same as before I was ordained.
Sure.
But I know by reason and by faith that the priesthood of Jesus Christ has been passed down through apostolic succession and was given to me, and that the Lord chose me for something pretty incredible. And so, yeah, becoming a priest is, yeah, it's still something I'm trying to understand and mm-hmm. unpack.
It almost sounds like, you know, a light went off. It's not that it was a burden or something, that it unleashed this inner feeling that maybe,
yeah,
know, an inkling or something.
I think brought to fulfillment might be the way I would put it.
Yeah.
Because it was definitely not binary. This developed throughout 9 years in the seminary. But yeah, now that I'm ordained and now that I'm being a priest for the people in the parish, it's like I feel like a fish finding water.
Okay. We'll leave it right there until we come back on God Calling. Father David Hojnacki is joining us right here on God Calling. Stay with us after these messages. We'll continue. Thanks for staying with us. Father David Hojnacki is joining us. Father, tell me about the seminary years. Was it what you expected?
You know, the seminary years, it's funny being asked about it because, I mean, it was my life for a decade.
Right.
I spent, by the time I was ordained, it was a third of my life that I had spent in the seminary.
Formation. Wow.
Yeah, it's like, well, what was the last third of your life like? Well,
sure.
Of course, there's ups and there's downs and there's incredible blessings and really, really hard days. Overall, like, it is such a good place. And we're so incredibly blessed here in Cleveland that we have two seminaries here in our diocese that primarily focus on forming our men.
Yes.
Where we have, basically, it's the Diocese of Cleveland, Diocese of Youngstown, and a handful of other groups and religious communities. But it's primarily focused on, like, we want to form priests for ministry here in the diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that formation here in the diocese. And we do it well. I feel so blessed to have been able to study not just here in Cleveland, but like with Cleveland.
Yeah.
I was ordained next to five of my best friends because we all went through this formation together. And mm-hmm. that was such an honor and a blessing.
You talk about tough days. Ever any doubts or just a matter of, nope, God's calling me to push through this burden or whatever?
Certainly some very tough days and some moments of like, could he really be calling me to this? Like sinful, broken, wounded me. Could he be calling me to this incredible ministry? Is this something that I kind of dreamt up in my own mind? Or is this really something that God wants for me?
Sounds kind of humbling almost.
Yeah, definitely humbling. And other moments of like, am I capable of bearing this? Am I capable of carrying the burdens of priesthood and of bearing the responsibilities of priesthood. I mean, any time that we're following what the Lord is asking of us, I think the devil sows doubts.
Sure.
You know, that's what St. Ignatius tells us in the rules, right? That, you know, when we're in consolation, when we're listening to what the Father is asking of us and we're intentionally moving towards virtue, it's the part of the evil spirit to sow seeds of doubt and kind of be that biting, nagging in the back of our mind, like, you're not really supposed to be doing this. That's not right. You're not good enough for this.
Yeah. As you get toward the end of seminary life, you go out into a parish for a year. What was that like and where were you?
So for my internship, I had the distinct blessing of being at St. Bernadette's in Westlake with Father Phil Rocco, who is just such an incredible man, such an incredible priest, and I admire him deeply. Yeah, he taught me a lot about priestly fraternity and about like the blessings of just a long life of priesthood. He's 73 years old and he for many years was at Holy Rosary in Little Italy and was kind of the dawn of that community.
That's for sure.
And now he's been at Westlake at St. Bernadette's in Westlake for many years. I was there during the COVID years. So I got there fall of 2020 and was there through spring of 2021. So it was a bit of a different experience. Not quite as much going on as far as programming, but we pushed through a difficult year of ministry, and it felt like we were doing it together. So it was myself, Father Phil, and then Father Kevin Fox was the parochial vicar at the time. And the three of us, it just felt like we were a team going through something hard together. And that was so good. And being able to go back to the rectory together and find community and find a lot of blessings in being together was so good.
A great learning experience, because there's going to be bumps in the road down the road as you continue your priesthood, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, God willing, we won't have any pandemics coming up anytime soon. Exactly. But yeah, the being able to learn to be flexible and adapt to new pastoral situations is certainly going to be valuable.
I was very fortunate. God was looking out for me. I retired right before COVID. From the television, you know, and because that would have been just a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
It was a tough way to go for everybody. Mm-hmm. But so you get out, you're ordained. Where did they send you?
So when I was ordained a deacon, they sent me to St. Mary's in Painesville.
Okay, sure.
Which is a wonderful community, largest Mexican population in the state. And I think there was some planning going on behind the scenes, because they sent me to a largely Spanish-speaking parish to kind of get my Spanish back up and running. I studied Spanish in college, and so I already spoke some Spanish, but it was getting a little bit rusty.
Sure.
So they put me out there and got my Spanish back up to a good standard. And then when I was ordained a priest, they sent me down to St. Mary's in Worcester, where we assist with the Spanish Mass at St. Agnes in Orville.
Okay.
So it's every other week I'm celebrating Spanish Mass out there for a small but kind of lovely little community that's growing pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it? There's the most basic question of all. Your voice tells me you are.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm constantly amazed by just the graces that the Lord allows me to witness, and the beautiful little moments. I mean, like, I keep finding myself saying, life is so full. And that means that my schedule is very full. That, like,
I bet.
I have so much that I need to do. But like, it's filled with so many blessings and so many just things. Like, I'll be sitting in the office and thinking, like, okay, today I'm going to get caught up on my emails finally, and I'm going to respond to all my voicemails, and I'm going to, you know, answer the correspondence that I've gotten, the letters, and write some thank you notes. It's going to be a busy work day, and I'm going to get my things done. And then right in the middle of it, I get a sick call, and I got to rush out to the hospital where someone is dying.
Yeah.
And their family is surrounding them, and they need a priest. And then I get back, and someone wants confession, and I duck into the confessional where, like, they're just pouring their heart out, and they're encountering their brokenness, and I meet them with the mercy of Christ, and things come out of my mouth that I didn't know, that, like,
no kidding,
are just beyond anything I could have planned for myself. Yeah, then I'll move on and get back to the office, and then I go and I celebrate Mass for the community, and the ups and downs and the privileges and the difficulties, it's all just so full. I feel like I'm living my life in, like, neon bright colors.
That's wonderful. What a description.
Pretty incredible. It's not that it's always fun or always perfect or always easy, but it's always bright and, yeah, lived out with, yeah, just like a sweetness to it.
Yeah. I'm going to close with something I read that you said, and that is that God is never outdone in generosity. Mm. Father David Hornatsky, thanks for joining us on God Calling. This
thanks
is Paul Orlowski. Please join us each and every week at this very same time right here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show, or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.